Welcome to Limitless Broadcasting Network. Limitless Broadcasting Network is a family-owned podcast and streaming platform dedicated to creating engaging programming for our audience. We produce a variety of shows, including podcasts, television series, movies, and documentaries. Here are some of the exciting podcasts we produce. The Pixie Dust Twins Podcast. You Can't Kill the Boogeyman Podcast. The Painful Truth of Living with Chronic Pain Podcast. Robbie Reviews Podcast. The Partner Complex Podcast. We also offer subscription podcasts such as The Secrets Uncovered, The Truth Behind the Lies Podcast, Bump in the Night Chronicles Podcast, Rant Radio Podcast, Hollywood Hustle Podcast, The Shows That Shaped Us Podcast, Limitless News Coverage Podcast, Strange World with Robert Podcast. You can find all podcast shows from the Limitless Broadcasting Network anywhere you get your podcasts. For ad-free episodes, subscribe now.
Hey everyone, it's Albert Parker here. I'm the host of the new Hollywood Hustle podcast, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network. Welcome to the show where we stop gawking at red carpets and start following the money. We dive deep into the financial secrets that keep Hollywood thriving. Not gossip, not just celebrity dirt, real structures, real cash flows, the corporate chess moves that decide what gets greenlit and what gets buried. Who actually owns Hollywood? Who makes the real money? And who's just along for the ride? So what makes Hollywood Hustle stand out? We don't just report headlines, we unpack them. Now how do you listen? Hollywood Hustle Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For ad-free episodes, be sure to subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.
I love you.
I know.
Here's Johnny.
Say hello to my little friend.
Hey, Albert Parker here, host of Hollywood Hustle. We dig into the money, the power plays, the deals that get films made, and get them on your screen. Quick one for the movie lovers in our audience. Robbie Reviews Podcast.
I feel the need.
A podcast that acts like that one movie-obsessed friend who actually knows what they're talking about. Robbie isn't just a fan. He cares about the craft, the storytelling, the way a director uses sound or a cut to land an emotion.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
So you get clear guidance on whether a movie is worth the time.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Robbie Reviews Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms, wherever you get your shows. But if you want a smooth, uninterrupted listening experience, you can subscribe for ad-free episodes at LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Welcome to the Limitless News Coverage Podcast, your premier destination for unbiased news. Your host, Maya Sinclair, brings you the latest and most significant global headlines along with national news and entertainment updates. Tune in as she covers the stories that matter most.
This is Limitless News Coverage. I'm Maya Sinclair. If you thought 2026 would ease us into the year, take a deep breath. January 1st through the 11th gave us shocks and shifts across continents. A U.S. military operation in Venezuela, a brutal crackdown inside Iran, devastating wildfires in Australia, a deadly fire at a Swiss bar, and a wave of immigration enforcement protests across U.S. cities. Over the next half hour, I'll walk you through the headlines, the human stories behind them, and what to watch next. Let's start with the quick headlines. January 1st, Bulgaria adopts the euro, Cyprus takes the EU Council presidency, and a New Year's fire in Crans-Montana, Switzerland kills 41. January 3rd, the United States conducts airstrikes in northern Venezuela and captures President Nicolas Maduro. January 5th, Delcy Rodriguez sworn in as acting president of Venezuela. January 7th through 11th, Iranian security forces unleash a massive, deadly crackdown on nationwide protests and internet blackouts spread. January 7th through 11th, wildfires in Victoria, Australia, burn hundreds of thousands of hectares. January 8th through the 11th, protests across the United States after a fatal ICE shooting in Minneapolis. Those are the big stories. Now let's unpack them.
We'll begin in Latin America, because what happened on January 3rd is unprecedented in the modern era of U.S.-Latin American relations.
On January 3rd, the United States launched multiple airstrikes across northern Venezuela. Those strikes culminated, according to official reports, in the capture of President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores. Within 2 days, on January 5th, Delcy Rodriguez was sworn in as acting president in Caracas. I want to be very clear. An operation of this scale, the capture of a sitting head of state by U.S. forces on sovereign territory, is a major, major turning point. It raises immediate, thorny questions about international law, regional stability, and what comes next for the Venezuelan people.
Let me give you context, because the history explains why reactions were so intense. Maduro has ruled in Venezuela through contested elections, deep economic collapse, mass emigration, and years of sanctions. There were earlier moments, remember the Guaido interregnum in the early 2020s, where international recognition of leadership was fractured. But no previous episode involved direct U.S. military action leading to the capture of a sitting president. So, you can imagine the shockwaves.
What did Washington say? The administration framed the strikes as counterterrorism and security operations. Claims of narco-terrorism activity and threats to U.S. interests were cited as legal grounds. But international law scholars and many foreign governments will ask, what was the legal authorization? Was there a U.N. Security Council mandate? No. So there are immediate sovereignty and legality issues that will be argued for months, if not years.
Regional reaction was swift and varied. Some governments in the hemisphere expressed alarm. Colombia, Brazil, Caribbean nations worried about precedent. If the U.S. takes this kind of step in Venezuela, who's next? Others, particularly Venezuelans who fled the Maduro era, reacted with cautious relief. But caution is key here. Regime change doesn't automatically equate to stability or democracy. The humanitarian crisis, food shortages, displaced people, hyperinflation remains. Guns and factions in the interior of Venezuela can still drive violence and uncertainty. So while some are celebrating a former regime leader's capture, millions of Venezuelans are asking what's next for their daily lives.
There are also real-world risks. Pro-Maduro military elements could mount an insurgency. Transnational criminal networks might fracture and lash out. The U.S. will be under pressure to quickly lay out a plan. Occupation, provisional governance, elections, humanitarian aid. But each option brings trade-offs. Occupation would inflame anti-imperialist sentiment. A hurried election could deepen divisions. Slow humanitarian flows risk more civilian suffering. This is not a tidy victory scenario. And domestically in the U.S., people noticed.
On January 11th, pool reports from the presidential gaggle included lines like the president saying the Venezuela situation was working out well and that he planned to meet with acting president Delcy Rodriguez and opposition figures. He also made comments about energy companies, telling ExxonMobil they were playing too cute, and mentioned Greenland in the same breath as a strategic concern. Those remarks crystallize a broader posture, muscular, transactional, and at times unpredictable. That posture has political consequences at home. Before we move on, quick human moment. Imagine a Venezuelan family in Bogota. They fled years ago, scraped together savings, send money home when they can. On January 3rd, they wake up to the news of Maduro's capture and feel something like hope, maybe relief. But then they think of their relatives in Valencia or Maracaibo with dwindling medicine, or of friends in rural areas where armed groups might fight back. That juxtaposition, joy and fear, captures the complicated human side of what otherwise reads like a geopolitical headline.
Okay. We'll pivot now to Iran, where events in the first week of January took an even darker shape.
Iran has been in the grips of a protest cycle that stretches back months, rooted in economic pain, political repression, and long-standing grievances. But on January 8th and 9th, this unrest met the most violent crackdown we've seen in years. Reports indicate that tens of thousands may have been killed over those 2 days alone, with thousands detained. These are staggering, staggering numbers. If they hold up under verification, we are looking at one of the deadliest state crackdowns of the 21st century. I know that sounds almost impossible, but multiple monitoring groups, reporting outlets, and diaspora networks are raising the alarm.
At the same time, internet access was cut in Tehran and other major cities. NetBlox reported a total outage, making it harder for journalists to verify on-the-ground realities and for families to reach loved ones. Of course, governments shut down connectivity during protests as a control mechanism. We've seen similar tactics in Myanmar, in parts of China, and around Iran itself before. But the scale of the reported killings and detentions in those January days and the speed of the blackout adds an especially chilling dimension.
Why does this matter beyond Iran's borders? First, it's a human rights catastrophe. Tens of thousands dead, or even thousands, represent a level of state violence that almost always triggers international investigation calls and sanctions. Second, it tests the limits of international institutions and norms. If a government can act so brutally with impunity, what does that say about enforcement of human rights? Third, Iran is a strategically positioned state in the Middle East. If its internal cohesion breaks down, regional proxies, migration flows, and energy markets could all be affected.
By the way, there's also a technical fight here. When a government kills and detains large numbers while cutting the internet, the usual channels of accountability, the videos, the eyewitness tweets, the rapid global reaction, are suppressed. Diaspora communities and satellite internet providers try to route around the blackout. Activists use whatever tech they can, including mesh networks and satellite comms, to get messages out. But it's a fight. And in a world increasingly orbiting digital evidence, an internet blackout gives state actors a brutally effective advantage.
We should also talk about the pattern here. Iran isn't an outlier when it comes to protest and suppression. Think of Mahsa Amini in 2022 or the 2019 fuel price protests. Each cycle has been met with force, but the scale this week is, again, different, which raises the question, will the international community respond with unified pressure, sanctions, referral to the International Criminal Court, or will geopolitics and energy ties mute the response? Some countries will be loud, others more cautious. That's something to watch in the coming weeks.
Now, a brief human angle again. Imagine an Iranian student in exile in Berlin. They've been posting videos and pleas for days. Then the feed goes dark. They can't reach their sister in Isfahan. Their voice is full of fear and shame and frustration. We told the world, and now there's nothing. That sense of helplessness is sadly becoming a familiar motif in modern repression. Let's move on to Europe and the Eurozone, less violent but important in a structural way. On January 1st, Bulgaria adopted the euro, becoming the Eurozone's 21st member. On the same day, Cyprus assumed the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union. These are, in some ways, housekeeping items of the EU, but they matter. Bulgaria's euro adoption is symbolic of deeper economic integration and confidence in the currency, even as domestic debates swirl about inflation and lost monetary autonomy. Cyprus's six-month presidency gives it agenda-setting authority at a time when Europe is juggling migration, Russia's war in Ukraine, and tensions in the Eastern Mediterranean. Small states occasionally get big turns at the wheel in the EU, and this is one of those moments.
Back to the realm of disaster and climate. January 1st brought one of Europe's first big tragedies of the year, a fire at a bar in Krans, Montana, Switzerland. The early reports, 41 people killed, 116 injured. It happened during New Year's celebrations, crowded venues, loud music, and very real questions about safety protocols, fire exits, capacities, pyrotechnics. Reminds me, harshly, of past nightclub fires around the world. Even in wealthy, regulated countries, deadly lapses happen. And then there was Storm Anna on January 1st as well. Heavy snow, strong winds in Poland and the Netherlands. Amsterdam's Schiphol Airport canceled and delayed hundreds of flights. Poland's S7 motorway was paralyzed with people stranded in sub-zero temperatures. Now, some will say winter happens, and of course it does, but extreme weather events like this strain our modern systems. Just-in-time logistics, holiday travel surges, and infrastructure not built for extremes. Another disaster. Wildfires in Victoria, Australia, from January 7th to the 11th. Over 300,000 hectares burned, more than 300 structures destroyed, and at least one reported death in early accounts. Australia's fire seasons have grown longer and more intense. Think Black Summer in 2019 and 2020, and this latest event is a painful continuation of that trend. Firefighters exhausted, communities displaced, long-term choices about rebuilding or retreat ahead. Climate risk is not hypothetical. It's now a routine part of many people's lives. If you've been wondering whether these winter storms or sudden fires somehow disprove climate change, short answer, no. Climate scientists emphasize that you can't attribute a single event solely to climate change without careful analysis. But the increasing frequency and intensity of extremes, the longer fire seasons, hotter heat waves, heavier storms, are consistent with what climate models predict. So this is the longer arc behind the headlines. We'll pause there and pivot to another complex conflict, Yemen. On January 9th, the Southern Transitional Council announced its dissolution after losing territory, including Aden. Yemen's conflict has been messy, multiple factions, outside patrons, and catastrophic civilian suffering. The STC's dissolution could produce new openings for negotiation, but it could also create a void other militias will try to fill. For shipping lanes in the Red Sea.
Do you love podcasts and classic television? Do you want to listen to Secrets Uncovered, the Truth Behind the Lies podcast and rant radio, completely ad-free? At Limitless Broadcasting Network, we bring you all your favorites like The Carol Burnett Show, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and I Love Lucy without any interruptions. For just $7 a month and $80 a year, you can unlock over 90 hours of quality television and podcast programming. Don't miss out. Subscribe today at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com, where endless entertainment awaits.
Are you intrigued by true paranormal stories? Do you crave tales of the strange, the dark, and the mysterious? Tune into our new podcast, Bump in the Night Chronicles, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network. Each episode dives into chilling paranormal phenomena and spine-tingling urban legends. From ghostly encounters to hair-raising myths, we explore the unknown. So if you're brave enough and not easily scared, subscribe now to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com for ad-free episodes.
Hey, it's Robert from Limitless Broadcasting, reminding you to tune in to Limitless Broadcasting Network anywhere you get your podcasts, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. Check us out today.
See, and for regional security, that uncertainty matters. These aren't isolated civil wars. They ripple outward. Japan had a mix of the mundane and the odd in early January. January 1st saw a bank merger between Hachijuni and Nagano banks. On January 5th, a bluefin tuna went for 510 million yen at Toyosu Market. Yeah, 3.2 million US dollars. Luxury culture and questions about overfishing. There were also a magnitude 6.4 quake in Tottori and Shimane on January 6th, minor casualties, and China announcing export controls on certain dual-use items to Japan on January 6th in response to Japanese comments on Taiwan. That's a reminder. Geopolitical tensions between Beijing and its neighbors increasingly play out in trade and tech restrictions. Okay, turning to the United States. If you were paying attention stateside, you saw the Venezuela operation become a major domestic story. It was also the backdrop to other headline events, an ICE shooting in Minneapolis that catalyzed protests from January 8th through the 11th across the country. The shooting of a woman named Renee Good triggered demonstrations from New Haven to Hartford, from Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C. to Hilo, Hawaii. Videos of an ICE van appearing to strike a protester in Hartford, plus footage of pepper spray, spread quickly on social media platforms. The protests are worth unpacking because they're more than local outrage. Hundreds gathered in Lafayette Square on January 10th, then marched past the White House and toward ICE headquarters. In Hartford on January 8th, about two dozen protesters were pepper sprayed, and a protester was knocked down by an ICE vehicle. Those are the reported incidents that drove more national attention. In Hartford on January 8th, Governor Matt Meyer and a state representative joined hundreds in Newark, an example of political leaders publicly aligning with protesters against a federal agency. That's notable. State leaders taking sides against a federal enforcement arm. On January 11th, the president's language raised tempers further, calling the Minneapolis shooting victim a very radical person and very violent in a Poole report. That kind of rhetoric, especially coming from the White House, tends to polarize. Supporters say it's a necessary candid assessment. Opponents see it as blaming the victim and dismissing calls for accountability. There are larger debates here. Is the protest movement directed at ICE as an institution, its funding, mandate, tactics, or at individual abuses of force? In practice, it's both. Advocacy groups call for stricter oversight, transparent investigations into the shooting, and policy changes to reduce federal immigration overreach. Law and order advocates insist ICE is enforcing the law and necessary for border control. Those debates will shape local politics and potentially congressional conversations about agency funding and rules of engagement. Let me give you a street-level scene. Hartford, it's cold. People are chanting. There's anger and grief. Someone posts video. An ICE vehicle backs suddenly and makes contact with a demonstrator. Screens light up across the country. That viral clip becomes a focal point for outrage. Ordinary people, teachers, church leaders, recent immigrants show up at rallies the next day. This is how local incidents go national in 2026. One moment, one clip, and suddenly public pressure mounts. I want to pause with a slightly offbeat note. The U.S. also seized two Shadow Fleet oil tankers around January 7th. One vessel was apparently under a Russian flag. That's a reminder that energy sanctions and interdictions remain a tool of statecraft, especially now as global energy supply dynamics are tense, what with changes in Venezuelan control and unrest in the Middle East. Now, moving to culture and entertainment, it can feel strange to jump from massacre and airstrikes to awards season, but culture often reflects and amplifies politics. Early January is awards time. Golden Globes and Critics Awards set the tone. This year, acceptance speeches and red carpet interviews frequently referenced Iran, Venezuela, and immigration. Artists of Venezuelan or Iranian descent use their platform to push for humanitarian aid, to press for investigations, to raise money. Musicians who were active in 2020 protests, some of them, appeared at ICE rallies or posted solidarity messages. So culture didn't look away.
There were also business headlines. Discussions in Hollywood about whether to pause promotion for films in solidarity or to push forward with charity tie-ins. Streaming platforms, which are global, had to navigate distribution challenges in countries with blackouts or new censorship around protest footage. Some distributors pulled content from Iran to avoid complicity. Others used embargoes as leverage. It's messy. And celebrities, some of whom have millions of followers, became accelerants for public awareness.
A lighter cultural note, but still telling, that bluefin tuna in Japan, a luxury purchase like that for $3+ million, juxtaposes sharply with images we were seeing at the same time in Tehran or in Venezuela. It's a reminder of global inequality and of the way certain cultural rituals persist even while violence grows elsewhere.
All right, let's take a step back. You've heard about regime capture in Caracas, a catastrophic crackdown in Tehran, climate disasters in Australia and Europe, and protests in U.S. cities. What unifies these disparate stories? A few themes: state power and its limits, how technology shapes accountability, the human cost of sudden political moves, and the continuing reality of climate-amplified disasters. Also, uncertainty. These first 11 days of 2026 did not deliver tidy answers.
Listeners, I want to address common questions and misconceptions you might be hearing. First, if Maduro is captured, democracy will return to Venezuela. Not necessarily. Regime removal doesn't automatically build democratic institutions. You need fair elections, a trustworthy judiciary, protection of civil liberties, and time for civil society to rebuild. Second, internet blackouts totally stop the truth. Not completely. Diaspora networks, satellite comms, and underground messaging sometimes still get images out, but blackouts make verification and rapid response much harder. Third, winter storms mean climate change is a hoax. No, single weather events don't disprove climate science. The broader pattern, more extreme and frequent events, does match scientific expectations.
We should also talk about legal and moral accountability. If state actors in Iran killed huge numbers of civilians, accountability mechanisms are slow. We can expect calls for sanctions, possibly ICC referrals, and pressure on governments to cut ties with officials implicated in abuses. Geopolitics complicates unified action. Energy interdependence, regional alliances, and competing interests often blunt decisive multilateral action. That friction will be visible in the weeks after January 11th. Before we wrap up the episode, a few human vignettes to keep this grounded. First, the traveler at Schiphol, stranded by Storm Anna on New Year's Day, sleeping on the terminal floor, watching departure boards flip to canceled. Small humiliation, but also an example of how infrastructure can fail millions at once. Second, a volunteer firefighter in Victoria, overworked, sunburned, describing the sound of a fire front like a freight train and the acrid smell of eucalyptus that sticks for days. Third, an Iranian mother in exile, trying the same number again and again while the line goes straight to voicemail, hoping for a text back, afraid. Fourth, a Hartford organizer, hands sore from holding signs, voice hoarse, but says, "I can't unsee that video. We have to act." These are the faces behind headlines. Okay, quick practical guide. What should you watch for next? Number one, Venezuela.
what is the path for governance? Will there be a transition council, provisional government, or an international mediation process? Will there be elections, and who will oversee them? Number two, Iran. Are there international sanctions or investigations that follow the crackdown? Will diaspora lobbying translate into policy changes? Number three, in the U.S., will congressional oversight or hearings target ICE tactics and rules of engagement? Will state leaders' public alignment with protesters influence federal funding? Number four, climate. How quickly will Australian authorities mobilize recovery funds, and will European travel infrastructure review protocols after Storm Anna? Finally, geopolitics. China's tech export bans to Japan and the shadow fleet seizures, these are part of a larger pressure campaign over trade, tech, and energy security. I also want to flag one more thing that cropped up in January, Greenland. It's been mentioned in presidential remarks, an odd, almost rhetorical bid for strategic territory. But the Arctic is a real theater now. Whoever controls Arctic routes and resources gains long-term leverage. Keep an eye on diplomatic friction between Western capitals over Arctic strategy. Don't let the bizarre rhetoric distract you from the serious stakes. Now, a brief note on sources and verification. Much of what I've described comes from dispatches and compiled reporting through January 11th, open-source monitoring groups, pool reports from presidential gaggles, emergency services reports, and aggregated timelines. In rapidly evolving stories, figures like casualty counts often change as independent verification arrives. I urge listeners to treat large numbers, especially in the Iran case, with caution until they're corroborated by independent human rights investigators or medical examiners. That caveat matters. Precision matters, especially when lives and accusations of atrocities are at stake. I know this is a lot. It's a grim, complex beginning to the year. But news is work, work that helps us see patterns and prepare. So let me close with three concrete things you can do if you feel moved by any of these stories. First, stay informed from reliable sources. Follow a mix of independent journalism, international monitors, and established wire services. Second, if you want to help civilians, look for vetted humanitarian organizations working in the affected places. In Venezuela, groups providing medical aid and food are stretched thin. In Iran, diaspora charities and human rights organizations offer support to families. In Australia, local relief funds and fire recovery groups will need support. Third, engage civically. Contact your representatives if you want U.S. policy to reflect your values about oversight of military operations, sanctions, or immigration enforcement. Public pressure matters. One last note. I want to acknowledge the emotional weight of these stories. When we talk about tens of thousands or scores dead, it's easy to abstract, but each number is a person. Someone's mother, neighbor, child. We'll keep reporting the facts, but we'll also keep the human stories front and center. To wrap up, the first 11 days of January 2026 have been a telling cross-section of where the world stands. Geopolitical shocks, severe state violence, climate disasters, and civic uprisings at home. Expect more fallout in the weeks ahead. Legal debates over the Venezuela operation, international responses to Iran, congressional maneuvering over ICE, and climate recovery efforts in Australia and Europe. We'll track these developments in the coming episodes. Thank you for spending this half hour with me. I'm Maya Sinclair. This is Limitless News Coverage. Take care of one another. We'll be back next week with more reporting and context.
Thank you for tuning into the Limitless News Coverage podcast. Your host and news correspondent is Maya Sinclair. This exclusive podcast can be found at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com. To enjoy ad-free episodes, make sure to subscribe. The podcast is edited by Robert Brooksby, who also handles the intro and outro production. Episode recording is done by Maya Sinclair. It's produced by 1950 Studios and distributed through the Limitless Broadcasting Network. You can catch this series and our other podcasts anywhere you get your podcasts. Remember to subscribe at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com for ad-free access.
Hey everyone, I'm Ashley.
And I'm Sammy, and we are
the Pixie Dust Twins. Going through Disney withdrawal? Well, we have the cure with Disney Center Topics every week.
You can check us out on all podcasting platforms or go to limitlessbroadcasting.com for more info, merchandise, etc.
We hope to see you on the podcast, but make sure to bring some pixie dust and happy thoughts.
And aim for the second star on the right and straight on till you land on the Pixie Dust Twins podcast.
We'll see y'all real soon.